Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Know-How is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name with Hover and build your online brand today. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase. And by Lighthouse. Lighthouse is the only security camera powered by the same technology that's in self-driving cars. Visit www.light.house/twit to sign up for 15% off Lighthouse when they ship and a chance to win a free Lighthouse plus a year of service. See site for contest rules. Today on Know How,
your perfect monitor, your perfect SSD, and your perfect 3D printer.
It's a feedback episode of Know How. Your questions, our answers. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and do a half-ass Kamehameha.
Sorry, the last time I overdid it, this time I needed to underdo it.
I understand. You know, you're going for that balance. It's like feng shui. Feng shui type of
chi. Whatever.
Whatever it is. But this is the show where we kind of open up your head to put in all the knowledge, because you need the knowledge to live in a world filled with stuff.
Yeah, we shove it in there.
The
stuff.
I'm comfortable with that.
That's okay, sorry.
All right.
Apologize.
Oh, but folks, you know, we haven't done a feedback episode in a while, and this is sort of a hybrid feedback. We got a little something. If you've been watching my Twitter feed, you know that we're going to be unveiling a unboxing of a brand new, yet unreleased printer. People have been asking me about this. They want something that's a bit more affordable, maybe something that's a bit more portable, something that maybe looks a little more cool, and something that actually breaks the $200 range. We've got that. But
where?
Oh, no,
I want to see it right now.
No. It's
is it under the table?
Spatial fold.
Oh.
It's something I learned from Doctor Who.
Oh, okay.
Bigger on the inside. Yeah. But before we get to that, we've got a couple of your questions that we wanted to knock out, because they're actually quite good. And I'm sorry, I know we haven't done one of these episodes in a while. That's why we're doing it now. Now, Jason.
Yeah.
A lot of people like laptops.
Yeah.
I love my laptop.
I love mine.
But when I'm working, I need real estate, screen real estate. It matters, right?
Yes, and I know this about you because your monitor is about at your desk is about the size of a house.
Now, it's not my monitor, per se. It's Leo's monitor.
Okay, all right.
And I will say that, you know, I'm going to be departing in a couple of months, and that monitor's staying, so...
Well, as far as I'm concerned, you sit next to me in the office, and I think proximity wins, if I'm not mistaken, right? So I get to...
Have you noticed that Megan's been moving her desk an inch closer to me every day?
We're going to come in one of these days, and she's going to be sitting at your desk.
That's it.
You're going to have to move.
Then I know. I go, okay, I'm done now. Thank you. Good old to see you. No, but we did have a question from Akita, that's her know-it-all, about the perfect monitor for his setup. This one comes from Giga Nano, which is, by the way, a great name. And Jason, what did Giga Nano want?
Giga, if that is your first name, said, I'm thinking of stepping up to a 4K monitor, and I would appreciate any insight or experience. I'm currently running Windows 10 with two Dell 24-inch 1920 by 1200 monitors off an NVIDIA 660. I'm looking for all-around use. I mostly do productivity stuff, PowerPoint, some video editing, general web browsing, Netflix, of course, a little web development, some gaming. First question, 27-inch or 32-inch, is it worth the price bump to move to the bigger size? Any problems with Windows 10 scaling on the 27-inch size? What do you say to the first question?
For the first question, yeah, this part is actually pretty easy, because Windows does do a per-monitor scaling. So if you wanted to do a multi-monitor setup, it's not as if, well, this monitor has to have huge text, and then on this monitor it's tiny text because it's a different resolution, different size. In my home setup, where I have four monitors, my main monitor, which is a 42-inch 4K monitor, that's set for 100% magnification. And then on the side, I have a sideways 4K monitor, but it's much smaller. It's a 27-inch. And so on that, the scaling is 175%.
To kind of equalize it.
To equalize it out. Right. So you can do per-monitor scaling in Windows 10. Actually, Windows 10 is probably the best of all the Windows to get that perfect scaling. Because even Windows 8.1 sometimes... it would do weird things, like just decide that you wanted to magnify that screen, and suddenly you know, the window that looks this big on this monitor, you move it over to the next monitor, and suddenly it's the entire screen.
You know what always bugs me about multiple monitors is you've got them all set up and you've got them in their positions and everything, but apparently I'm not setting it up properly because when I move my cursor over, it comes out of this monitor like down here. Even though they're lined up at the top or whatever, so I guess doing the scaling, you can get that closer to real, right?
Precisely, and you still do get that kind of sometimes where you like drag it over. And the way that Windows 10 works is, you know, it'll come down to this point. So let's say you're dragging across the window. Suddenly it enters into the other monitor on this point. But it won't rescale the window until you drag the whole thing in. So over the years, they've kind of tweaked it to make it less jarring.
Right.
But that per-monitor scaling is still important because ultimately you need to be able to read the text. And if the side monitor is so small that you can't read the text, you might as well not have it.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, but the answer is, don't worry about the scaling. Scaling's easy. What's the second question?
Windows 10 got you covered. Okay, second question is, HDR is seemingly the next big thing, high dynamic range. How important is that on a computer display?
Okay.
I would guess that depends on what you're using it for, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, HDR is just, it's win. It's all around win. So we're talking about high dynamic range.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine this. This right here, this is what the human eye can see. In terms of color gamut, brightness, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
So when I have to take that and put it down into a computer monitor or any monitor, a TV, what has to happen is it has to get super compressed into a spectrum like this, right? Now, that's not bad. It still faithfully represents most of what I can see, but, I mean, anyone knows that this is bigger than this. Mm-hmm. So if I have a low dynamic range, it just means that the brights aren't as bright, the blacks aren't as black, and everything just feels kind of compressed.
Yeah.
High dynamic range, there still is a tiny bit of compression, but it's much, much less. So if I can get an HDR monitor or display along with HDR source material that hasn't already been compressed, it looks much closer to what I actually see in the real world, and that's always good.
So from that perspective, you get a monitor. So it sounds like what you're saying is if given the choice between HDR and non-HDR on a monitor, you should probably opt for getting it.
I would always
opt. It's going to increase the cost, right?
Oh, yeah. That's the problem. And it's not just cost. Unfortunately, I know people want me to say get the HDR or don't get the HDR. I would always opt for getting the HDR if price were no object. But if HDR is going to add $1,000 to the price of a 27-inch monitor, that's not an option for me. For some people, it is. I mean, again, if I had no spending limit, I would always get the HDR thing, except for this other piece, which is since HDR was announced to be coming to computer monitors in CES of 2017, so earlier this year, you had all the bigs who said they were signing on. You had Dell, you had Samsung, LG, Acer, Asus. They were all going to release HDR monitors, which is good, except now the standards for HDR have gone all wonky. And so, you know, what you might have HDR on this may not be HDR in a year.
Is that just to say that the scale that you're talking about is not always the same? Like, it's wider than without HDR.
Right.
But they might not match between models.
Right. So what HDR means might change between models.
Okay.
And also how you actually just communicate the HDR data, the metadata to the monitor might change. So what I would do is I would actually wait. Even though I love HDR and it is a great demonstration, if you can, wait. Because you're talking about such an increase of price, it doesn't make sense to buy a monitor that's 3x, 4x, 5x of a standard standard definition monitor if you're not going to be able to use that properly in a year or two.
And that's as significant as the price difference is at this point in monitor technology.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
One other question real quick before you move on. Does that require having a monitor of that class, does that require extra hardware inside the computer to drive that extra information? Or it's already passing through that information. It's just this monitor can capture that now.
Right, yeah. So we're talking about color gamut. And if the monitor can't handle the color gamut,
it just shaves it off.
It's just going to shave
like a filter.
It off. It's going to filter. It's going to compress it down.
Okay.
So all of our video cards are capable of displaying HDR content. Now, we don't have that much HDR content.
Right.
But a few people in the chat room are pointing out that, you know, with HDR, video games look fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
They look fantastic as long as you're using HDMI 2.0, because HDMI 1.4 barely has enough bandwidth to really support all of that.
Okay.
HDMI 2.0, which all the modern computers have, will support it no problem.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're pointing out, like, in the dark scenes of video games, you actually end up seeing more.
Because
I know that's where I've seen you know, kind of the dynamic range fall apart. You go into a dark room in a video game, and it's like you have blackness, and then you have a shade of gray.
Your grayness.
Yes, a shade of gray. This might actually give you a little bit more depth when you end up in those.
Well, I remember the first time I saw that in a video game, I was playing BioShock, and this was on the old Xbox 360. And they did that adjustment thing at the very beginning where you kind of you'd use a controller to adjust the black point. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to make that gray bar more black. And it would calibrate it for your TV. Well, that's because with all the different types of compression that you have with TVs, that there was no, like, black. There was kind of black and kind of gray, and this would allow you to set it.
None more black.
Yeah. Now, if you've ever had a HDR setup right next to a standard dev setup, you immediately notice the difference. It's kind of hard to explain, but I mean, it looks phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Nice. I know I need to upgrade my own system too.
But you know what? I want to help him because think about what he's asking. He's right now using two monitors, both 1900 by 1200. They're 24 inches, which by the way are great. I actually have two 24 inches right next to my 42 inch 4K screen. I stack them up on top of each other. It's the perfect slide across. Off of an NVIDIA 660, which is going to have more than enough power to run a 4K monitor. And he does PowerPoint productivity stuff, so web surfing, Word, Excel, some video editing, that's important, and general web browsing /Netflix/gaming. And by putting /gaming at the end, I think he means like casual gaming. He's not a gamer.
Right.
So why don't we take a look at some of the monitors that I like? There's a lot out there. And most of them are really, really good. If you buy a decent brand name, you're going to get a good monitor. But I've developed a few that I really, really like.
Are these all sans HDR at this point?
Yeah. None of these will do HDR, but that's just because I don't want to pay, again, that ridiculous amount of money.
These are already kind of a little pricey.
It's a Dell Ultra Sharp. I do like the Dell Ultra Sharp series. Specifically, is it the U2717D? I think we have a link for this. It's about $450. It's 2560 by 1440, so it's a 2K monitor, 60 hertz with an anti-glare coating, IPS, that's 178 by 178 degree viewing capability. So in-plane switching just means you have a wider viewing angle.
Okay.
You take a standard LCD, and you can go maybe 60 degrees off.
Right.
Either axis.
Before it starts,
yeah, you get the color shift. This is almost out to the edges, so really, really well done.
Very nice.
HDMI with MHL, so you could do the direct to Android type connection if it supports that. DisplayPort, mini DisplayPort. This is between a 6 and 8 millisecond response time. A USB 3.0 hub. 2.33 pixel pitch. So that's how many pixels you're going to fit per inch. This is nice. So for $450, this is probably where I would start my 27-inch monitor view, which is not bad. You know, this works really well. And for $450, I can get a couple of these for the price of a 32-inch monitor. He did ask if I thought the bump between 27-inch and 32-inch was worth it. No, and I'll explain why I don't think it's worth it in just a bit.
Interesting. Okay. I've wondered about that, too. You can get this for as low as $300 on eBay if you're willing to go refurbished.
Precisely. Now, the next one I would do in the 27-inch range, and this is probably not for him because this is more for gamers, is the Acer Predator XB1. We had this in the studio. I love this monitor. This is so, so nice.
It looks like an alien.
This is, again, it's a 2K monitor, 2560 by 1440, 144 hertz, so the refresh is really high. I love that. NVIDIA G-Sync, which is, if you're a gamer, G-Sync makes all the difference. It makes everything so much nicer. Again, it's an IPS screen, so 178 by 178 degree viewing angle. HDMI 2.0 and DisplayPort, so you're going to be able to get all the highest refresh rates through it. USB 3.0, it'll have two speakers. It does a 4 millisecond response time, gray to gray, so it's much better for gaming. And again, the 0.233 pixel pitch. One problem, those are going to cost you $600 to $700.
Gosh, I'm finding even a little bit more than that.
Yeah, well,
B&H has it for $800.
They're in demand. Yeah. So they don't have enough of them. So if you can actually right now, the funny thing is the cheapest place to buy this is directly.
Not
this one. Well, the cheapest place to buy that, the Acer Predator,
yes,
is directly from the Acer site. Okay. Any place else, they're so supply constrained that the prices are getting kind of jacked up.
Yeah.
Let's see. So are you
buying one right now?
No, I'm just looking, you know, doing my homework. I need to upgrade my monitor at home. This is actually totally pertinent to me right now.
Right.
Because my monitor is really old.
Now, people at, like Virgil in the chat room is saying, well, why not the Acer X34? Here's the thing. 34 and 32-inch monitors,
yes,
significantly more expensive than their 27-inch brethren. And if you're going to pay that much more, I would go just for a screen that's more.
What do you mean more?
Well, I'm thinking maybe something like, I don't
know. God, here it goes.
That's a 27-inch. So, you know, your 27-inch monitor there, it's kind of cute, Jason.
Oh,
you know,
yeah. See, though. I could fit my entire body inside of this monitor.
This bad mamma jamma, this is the Dell P4317Q. This is a ridiculous screen. This is a 43-inch screen. It's 4K, so 3840 by 2160, 60 hertz refresh via DisplayPort only. You can't do that via HDMI. IPS, so again, 178 by 178 degree viewing angle, does DisplayPort 1.2, mini DisplayPort, two HDMI 1.4 ports, and two VGA ports. USB 3.0, this actually has the ability to be four different monitors. I can plug in four different computers and have them picture by picture by picture by picture.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
I mean, I can attest. This has been in the office that we share for months.
Yeah.
It looks really nice.
Every time I see it,
I'm jealous. Like, I would love to have this at home for my music setup.
Yeah.
My music production setup, I could have literally everything I ever need to see on the screen at once. It would be awesome.
This is actually Leo's monitor, and I stole it a year ago. And he keeps, every once in a while he walks by my desk, he goes, "Don't think you're going to take that home." I'm like, I know.
It's a sweet monitor. And honestly, I would have expected the price to be more than this.
Yeah.
I don't know if my thoughts are outside of the realm of reality, but $950 doesn't seem like that.
That's
much
not much. This is under $1,000, and if I were to get a 32 or a 34-inch monitor that was decent,
yeah,
that's easily $16,000 to $2,000. So this, wow. Again, it's not a gaming monitor, but he didn't say he was a gamer. He said he did some gaming. This is perfect for some gaming. It's an 8-millisecond response time. Won't use it for Twitch games, but it's, you know, fine for like platform. Cuphead looks great on this. But the biggest thing is the 4K monitor I have at home, the big one,
yeah,
is actually a TV being used as a monitor. No comparison whatsoever.
Yeah.
Not even
I wondered
close.
About that, because a lot of times you do that, you can cut down the cost for
whatever
reason.
Oh, yeah, it's much cheaper. Yeah.
TVs are less expensive. I'm sure there's a reason for that. But.
This is so sharp. I go from home to here, and I love working on this monitor.
Yeah.
So much less eye strain. It's actually kind of worth it just to not destroy your eyes. Go figure.
Now, again, I realize I asked this question earlier, but it always comes up in my brain because I have an old Mac Pro at home. It's like a 2009, I think, mm-hmm, Mac Pro. So, yes, I need to upgrade that as well. But I think about something like
yep,
this, and then I think, well, then I probably have to get extra hardware on my computer to drive it. Do I?
No.
At full resolution?
As long as you have a third-generation Intel processor or higher, which is also a third-generation Bridge, you can support 4K.
Okay.
And if you have DisplayPort on that MacBook,
yep,
right? Then it will do the 60 hertz. It will do the full refresh. That's
okay,
possible. Now, the other thing, and people in the chat room are picking up on this, this is a 16:9 monitor. A lot of people like the 34-inch widescreens because it seems to be better for video editing. If you watch movies on an ultra-wide mm-hmm monitor, you end up with huge black bars on the side, even in the letterbox version. This is the right aspect. This looks really, really nice. You'll use the entire screen. I love the anti-glare coating on this thing. I mean, I can't say enough. If I was staying in the United States, I actually had budgeted to buy one of these things. Unfortunately,
well, if you budgeted it and you're not going to, I'm just saying, you can go ahead and transfer that to me
just
and
change
I'll
the
be
delivery
okay
address.
It.
Is that what you're talking about?
It.
Okay, yeah. So that's what I would suggest. I mean, honestly, if your main thing is productivity and email and you have about $1,000 to spend, there is none that's better than that right now.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
It's sweet. Again, not a super gaming monitor, but you didn't say you were a super gamer, so.
Yeah.
I think that's good, right?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do a related question, because we had another question come to me over Twitter from Caffeine Free Dave. Now, Caffeine Free Dave specifically wanted to ask about monitors but for his Chromebook. Jason, what do you ask?
All right, Mr. Caffeine writes, how do I choose a monitor for my Chromebox i3 4GB? I don't want to get one that I can't drive or don't get the most Chrome out of my box. I've never bought a monitor. I've always bought a laptop, and the monitor is always included. By the way, this was on Twitter, a single tweet. Mm-hmm. So congratulations, you were one of the chosen few that can write that much in a single tweet.
Actually,
jealous.
I concatenated two tweets. I kind of put
in that one thing.
I did.
You did.
See?
But no, it's all there.
Oh wait,
all there.
Is he 280 characters?
Yeah, that's definitely
caffeine free. Dave, you've been holding back on me.
Yeah, pretty sweet. So congratulations, there. You win the prize that I don't have
internet
to give you. But what is the answer?
Well, here's the thing. Let's take a look at a Chromebox now. You probably remember this one. Does this look familiar?
I remember those.
This was Google I/O, what, 2011?
Yeah. I will go ahead and say that I plugged it in once. And I just went ahead and got rid of it.
Folks, this was actually the Chromebox that was given the same year at Google I/O. It was the same year as the Nexus 7 tablet and the Nexus phone.
This was like
and
5
the Orb.
Years ago.
Yeah. Remember the Orb?
The Nexus Q?
Yeah. Oh, actually, you have one.
I have one in the office, yeah.
This is not bad. This is an i5 processor, and the whole idea is it runs, you know, the Chrome OS.
It's obviously
I've used it a lot.
Machine that you love because you decided to keep the plastic on there so that it would never tarnish.
That means nothing because I'm Filipino and we keep the plastic on everything.
I can see why. It makes it beautiful.
Hold on, wait. See,
it makes for beautiful hardware.
There's a trick to this. You gotta get the bubbles out. No! I tore it.
Just go for it. It's the best part.
Okay, fine.
Doesn't that feel good?
It's 6 years old, but now it's new again.
Exactly.
Except now I can't remove this because the plastic has actually fallen apart.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, hey, 6 years ago, there was a lot worse design in the world than what we have right here. This is the nice rounded corners.
Yeah,
this probably not what's cool about
this. A lot of the hardware looks like this, though. So, yeah. I mean, you get the basic ports. So, I mean, actually, obviously not DVI right now. This does have two display port out, Ethernet, USB. It's not a bad box. He's probably got something like an Asus i3. Here's the thing. When you start looking at the maximum resolution that you can get out of a Chromebox, since it's going to be using shared memory, it doesn't have a dedicated graphics part, it really depends on the processor, specifically on the generation of processor. Now, if you've got a third-gen box, so i3, a third-gen i3, assuming HDMI connectivity, you're limited to 2560 by 1600. That's the most that you can push out of that. It just won't support more. However, if it's a fourth to seventh gen Intel chip, any of their I series, it will support up to 4K. So 4096 by 2160, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. Now, if however, you are running an i3 and you said you were running an i3 with 4 GB of memory, you could technically run 4K. It is going to struggle at 4K. There's nothing that's going to reduce the amount of pixels it has to push at 4K. So what I would probably say is go 2K if you really need high definition, or even better, stick with 1080p. In Android, do you really need a whole lot more than that?
I mean, it's probably the kind of thing that if you can, then you might as well. But no, that's probably going to be sufficient. Now, Beatmaster in chat, I'm curious on this particular box. He says, that thing screams media player. When I think of Chrome OS, I don't necessarily think of media player. Could you use it like that if you were willing to kind of sacrifice the quality and not have 4K and, you know, plug this into your TV? Is it even possible, do you think?
If I were to use this as a media player, I would blow away the Chrome OS.
Yeah, and you just throw Linux in there.
Yeah, I would throw something like, because the thing is, there's a developer option that you can enable on this, which then allows you to wipe out the OS.
Okay.
And I would install something like OSMC, the Open Source Media Center.
Okay.
That works so much better than anything you're going to be able to clutch on top of Chrome. Especially this version, it wasn't designed for that.
I mean, yeah.
They thought this was going to be their enterprise box. So on every desk and every corporation with, you know, thousands of users, they were going to replace the desktop with one of these.
Mm-hmm.
Good idea, but it also means they're kind of limited.
Yeah, it was also ahead of its time, too, that idea 5 years ago. Different than the potential of that now, you know.
Precisely.
Where Chrome OS has really taken a lot.
But I mean,
it's done a lot more.
Again, think about what they gave away at that show. There were four things. There was the tablet, the phone, this, and the Orb. And really, two out of three ain't bad. The tablet took off. The phone took off. The Q, Not so much.
No, the Q fell flat on its face.
Have you been able to make the Q do anything?
Well, you can't now. They've deactivated it. So it's literally on. Yes, and I keep it plugged in for that very reason. And anytime I'm syncing or pairing Bluetooth, it always appears in the nearby devices. Aww, so you can still pair to it.
It's just like a reminder. I'm still here.
I'm here. Do something with me. Yeah, no, they killed it a long time ago.
Notice me, senpai. Okay, well, here's what you want to do. Actually, Alex, if you go to the link that's in green there, this is a really good resource for maximum resolution. This is straight from the Intel website. If you go here, this will tell you exactly what resolution your product is going to support. But remember, just because your product supports it, doesn't mean the experience is going to be good at that resolution.
Does it send? Yeah. Are you able to get video out of it? Yes.
Yeah,
what about everything else? Slow down.
Like the office PC that I have here. I found one of Burke's old video cards and I just threw it into a PCIe slot, just so I could run the extra two monitors. But the 4K monitor is running off of the embedded Intel graphics, which is a horrible experience. But it doesn't mean I'm going to give up the monitor.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep it till I leave.
Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go from monitors to something a little more fast. Specifically, we had GeekWise who had a question about SSDs. Jason, want to bring us in?
All right, Geek says, what would you recommend for a 500 gigabyte SSD for my home desktop? It will be my boot drive that I really need to replace. It's a Dell Studio XPS 435MT with an i7 CPU and 24 gigs of RAM. I need to stay under $200. Under $200 for a 500 gig SSD is not impossible anymore.
Not impossible. Right? Used to be crazy impossible.
Yeah.
Like last year, that was impossible.
Right.
Now, no, you've got choices.
Changed.
You've got choices. But before we get to the realistic choices, I wanted to show off some of my favorites.
Okay.
Yeah. Now let's take a look at this one first. This is kind of nice. If you go to the overhead, this is the Predator. You've seen this on the show before. This is one of my favorites. I've actually got three or four of these things currently in operation. This is actually just an M.2 part installed on this board. Now for this, you do require an M.2 PCIe. By 4, so revision 3 by 4, because this will do 1,400 megabytes per second read and 1,000 megabytes per second write. Now, to put that in perspective, if you've got a hard drive in your computer, that will maybe do 40 megabytes per second read and like 25 megabytes per second write. So,
the industry that benefits most from something like this?
Video editing.
That's kind of what I was thinking.
Absolutely.
Like full 4K resolution video editing.
Yeah. Unfortunately, for a 480 gigabyte version of that, that's $600.
Yep, that doesn't work.
That's not going to work. And not only that, I know his desktop because I had his desktop when I was in D.C., the Dell Studio XPS 435MT. Good box, but the PCI slots in it are not revision 3, so you wouldn't even be able to get the full speed of this.
Mm.
Let's go to something even more insane, something that he really couldn't do. This is a terabyte. This is a terabyte of SSD goodness. This is the Kingston DCP-1000. Now, Jason, that other one was pretty good. You know, a 1,400 megabytes per second read, 1,000 megabytes per second write. This thing does 6,800 megabytes per second read, 5,000 megabytes per second write. It does 1 million IOPS. Now, this is not a consumer board, even though I have one in my PC because I'm crazy. This is really designed for data centers. This is multiple M.2 cards that have been put together in a performance RAID. Mm-hmm. But it uses a special switching fabric, which does not add any latency. I know, it sounds magic, but it totally works. One problem.
Hmm.
Okay, so this requires 8 PCI 3.0 lanes. That you're not going to get it on that MT.
Yeah, probably not.
Also, a little bit out of his price range.
A little bit?
Yeah, it's $1,000.
Now I see the price.
Yeah. Okay.
$1,053.99, to be specific.
But now that we've gotten all the dreamy stuff out of the way, let's talk about what's more realistic.
Let's give you something you can actually get.
Let's actually answer the question rather than just kind of salivating
dream.
Over gear.
I will say, a year ago, that's the same Mac Pro that I was talking about. I'm always looking to stretch it, you know, because I don't want to have to upgrade unless I absolutely have to. I think I'm getting close to there. So I replaced all the regular drives with SSDs. It was not that expensive.
No.
And I was able to throw a bunch of terabyte SSDs in there.
Isn't it crazy how much faster it becomes?
Yeah. It's night and day.
Yeah.
You know, booting up used to be such an annoyance with that computer, and now it just takes seconds. It really does make that much of a difference.
Quick note on Jason's idea of upgrading, because this, again, it is an older desktop. The 435 MT is a little bit older. It is actually limited to SATA Revision 2, not SATA Revision 3. The difference is Revision 2 runs at 3 gigabits per second. SATA Revision 3 runs at 6 gigabits per second. Why is that important? Let me explain. All of the newer SSDs can actually saturate the SATA Revision 2 bus. They transfer data faster than that bus can handle. So if you get a SATA 3 drive SSD and you put it into a SATA 2 computer, it just means that it will work, but it's not going to be running as fast as it possibly could, because you're going to saturate the bus before the drive hits its limit. Right, so even the cheapest SSD right now is going to be way faster than your computer can handle. Just know that. Okay, so let's take a look at the super budget version. This right here, I kind of like this. This is the Kingston A400. It's a 480 gigabyte drive. This one's going to run you $150. So that is great. That is super, super economical. Now, it's 500 megabytes per second read. It's 450 megabytes per second write. But this is a grab bag of memory. In fact, the representative, he told me, you understand the reason why we can get this price point so low is we just kind of take flash parts from everywhere. Mm. Doesn't mean it's unreliable. It just doesn't mean everything's matched. So there might be variances from one unit to the next. But again, that's how they get the price so low.
How much of a variance are you looking at? Like, is that anything that anyone would really notice?
This computer, because he's not going to be able to use it at its max, he won't notice it at all.
Right.
So if we've got a link for that, $150, and you've got yourself half a terabyte of storage, that's not bad.
Nice.
That's actually pretty good.
Very good.
Now, let's go one step up. My one step up from that A400 would be something like this. This is the UV400. This will do, 550 megabytes per second read, 500 megabytes per second write. Again, faster than this, but since I'm not going to be able to tap anywhere near the potential of either over this desktop, the reason why I would get this is because I was thinking, you know what, when I replace my desktop eventually,
I can pop it in again.
Pop it in, it'd be all good. This is really close to the maximum of the SATA Revision 3 bus. Now, this is more reliable. These are actually using matched memory parts. So unlike the A400, it's not the grab bag. You're not going to see great variances in performance between units. And I kind of trust it more. And that's only $170. If you go to the link to there, $20 more is going to give you arguably a more reliable product, which is kind of good, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, this right here, though, this is a kit, right? So that you can...
That's an upgrade kit, yeah.
Okay, so this is... All right.
Yeah, it's cool. a little different. Yeah. Now, it's not just all Kingston. There's actually a Samsung drive that I really like. Super reliable, not that expensive. It's the Samsung 850 Evo, the 500 gigabyte version. We've got a link for this. This is $150. And if you're not... I'm in a Kingston, and I kind of like to keep all my storage in the same vendor. Just because that's my personal preference. Mm-hmm. But if you're in the Samsung camp, this is a great drive. It's not their fastest, but again, you're not going to be able to use their fastest. 540 megabytes per second read, 520 megabytes per second write. That's pretty decent.
Right on. Okay.
One last bit, and you've seen me use this before. This is the Savage. This is the HyperX. It's also a Kingston product. This is the 240 version, but the 480 gigabyte version of this costs $240, and it does actually come. Well, let me make sure I don't have the serial number there, because people can use that. I know people are going to be all sketch. This thing is crazy fast: 560 megabytes per second read, 530 megabytes per second write. This absolutely will max out your SATA Revision 3 bus. I also like the fact that it comes with all the tools that you're going to need to install. I've taken out the case, but also a little USB 3.0 case. I love this kit. I really love this kit. And if I was thinking future upgrade, this would probably be the one that I would want, because I can pop this out of my old desktop, put it in my new desktop, and it will be still crazy fast.
Yeah, you're paying a little bit more up front to make sure that you're future-proof when you move to the next thing. Now, I will point out one very important thing right now.
Yeah.
What month is it?
Oh, I don't know. It might be November.
November. What happens at the end of November?
Black Friday.
Yes, and Black Friday is a very good time to pick up SSDs, very good time to pick up a lot of this type of stuff. So I would say if you're this close, maybe hold off, have these models mm-hmm. set aside, and just wait for Black Friday. You yeah. don't have to wait and wait and wait through Christmas or whatever. I suppose you can if time is no don't. Issue. But, you know, Black Friday, a lot of stuff goes on sale, and you're almost guaranteed, I would guess, to see some of this hit Amazon or whatever other sites and get a nice $20 or $30 shaved off of it.
Now, do you still do Black Friday where you wait in line at the store?
Or is, no!
Yeah, it's all online, right?
Heck no, I don't wait in line for anything.
Yeah.
There's probably things I wait in line for. But I don't go to the stores that early. I'm not that interested in a deal.
I did it once about 15 years ago where I went to, it was like a Best Buy or something. I just wanted to see what it was like. I had never done one of those.
Oh,
and after about 15 minutes, I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm out of here. This is, yeah. you know, it's there's such a rush that people are basically putting anything in the cart. They're not even looking at like, what it is. It's like, oh, it's on sale.
Yeah, it's just kind of gross, I think.
Yeah. If I were a marketer, what I would do is, I would find all the stuff that isn't selling, and I would put it right up front on Black Friday with, like, 60% off, and people wouldn't even know.
Yeah. Be like, yeah, I want that.
What
That's
is
great.
It?
It's a deal. I don't know, but
it's
I'm getting a deal.
It's a CD sanitizer. Okay. Yeah, it's a gift. Ah. All right. Now, when we come back, you know what I want to do? I want to take a look at disasters.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We'll do that in just a bit. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take a moment to thank a sponsor of this episode of Know How. Now, Jason, you may have heard location, location, location.
I've heard right? that.
It's all about location. It's all about making sure you're in a place where your work, your personality, who you are is visible. I mean, that works online. It works in the real world. It works pretty much anywhere. Well, if you want to get the proper location, if you want to make sure that your work is noticed, what you need to do is to pair yourself with a company that will help you to get that exposure, will help you to get that location, that will help you to be who you need to be online. And that's why I'm so happy to have Hover as a sponsor of Know How. Now, what are you passionate about? Do you have an idea for a business? Are you launching a creative project? Buying a domain is the first and biggest step to building your brand online because it is all about that location. Now, Hover has over 400 domain extensions to choose from to help you form your brand to make it a reflection of who you are. That's a lot of choices to help you find the perfect domain name. Now, if you're a blogger or a company trying to create new leads or inform your customer base, you can use the .blog instead of a generic .com or .biz domain name. Now, by using .blog, you tell everyone to expect impactful content, something personal, a personal statement, or a business rather than a generic homepage. Whatever your interest might be, Hover has an extension for you. That includes .tech. .photo, .security. And do you know what else is great about Hover? It's got the best in-class customer support team and no upsells. They don't get commission. They just want to support you. They want you to be a happy customer because they understand that happy customers are their best advertising. Now, the Hover Connect feature allows you to connect your domain name to any host or website builder with just a few simple clicks. And personalized email that matches your domain and further supports your online identity is all included in your package. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to show the online community who you are and what you're passionate about. Just go to hover.com/twit and get 10% off your first purchase. That's hover.com/twit. And we thank Hover for their support of Know How. Jason.
Yes.
I don't like disasters.
Nah, neither do I.
But they happen.
They do.
I mean, we had it in Houston, we had it in Florida, we had it in Puerto Rico, we had it here. I mean, mm-hmm. we had a big scare at the studio just a few weeks ago.
Best to be prepared ahead of time. When we were, when the call was out that Petaluma may be evacuated, mm-hmm. thankfully it wasn't evacuated due to the Sonoma fires, but when that call was out, I realized I had all my backups, just as one example yep. of being prepared, on drives that I could throw in the luggage so all my stuff would be there. But, you know, they say you need it all over the place, mm-hmm. and I didn't have my cloud backup going, so I fired that off, and that's been churning ever since in case something happens in the future.
I've had that, too, where it's sort of like, oh, yeah, disaster. I should probably have done all that stuff I should have done
yeah,
6
exactly.
months ago.
It takes something like that often to yeah. push you over the edge to actually do it, which is actually a good thing.
Well, we had Jay Ricardo, who had a question about being prepared for these disasters, specifically about our episode on the new screensavers about bug out bags. Jason, what'd he say?
Let's see here. Jay says, I just watched New Screensavers episode 122, where Padre and Patrick Norton talked about their bug-out bags. Interesting idea, but both of them only had water for a few days at most. I think any real bug-out bag needs to give the user the ability to stay off the grid for weeks or months at a time if the excrement strikes the air-moving component of the atmospheric regulator. Interesting way to put that. Mm-hmm. Will you be doing a know-how version of the bug-out bag that includes a longer-term water supply?
First of all, I have to say, Jay Ricardo, I appreciate the, excrement hits the air-moving component of the atmospheric regulator. I am almost positive I know where you got that from. You got that from the Bobaverse? If you did, tweet me back, but that's awesome. It's basically the crap hits the fan.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Yeah, you got that.
I got that.
Now, this was cool. Patrick Norton and I, we went through what we had in our bug-out bags, because we both have several. I've got two bug-out bags in my residence. I've got one bug-out bag in my car. I've got a bug-out bag in Las Vegas, one in D.C. I've got two in Rome. And it's just...
Prepared.
I'm prepared. But also, you know, it's a recognition of what you might need for that. Patrick was big on saying there is no best bug-out bag. The bug-out bag that you need to build has to fit your needs and the area. Mm-hmm. You know, what might work for one side won't work for another. But what always does work is water. And that's what Ricardo picked up. Now, in the episode, I carried 3 liters of pure water in my bug-out bag. And the reason why I don't carry more is because water is actually pretty heavy.
Yeah.
It will quickly weigh
you down.
It takes
up a lot of space, too.
And it does take up a lot of space. So he rightfully said I could only survive maybe 3 days if I was willing to be dehydrated a little bit. 1 liter of pure water a day will probably keep me moving just enough to get where I need to go, get going. But if I needed it to be longer, I actually did have something in my bug-out bag that would help me, specifically these. This was a kit that I had showed off on the episode. If you go to that link there, this is the Sawyer Mini Filtration. Oh, the next one. The Sawyer Mini Filtration System. Now, the whole idea is I have this foldable bag right here, and I can fill this with like creek water or nasty water, basically anything, the purest water I can find that might still have some contaminants in it, and then I can just squirt it into this bottle. So I have the dirty bottle and I have the clean bottle, and this will give me decent water. It's not going to really clear out any of the chemicals that might be in the water, but it will definitely clear off any of like the microbes, bacteria, amoebas, microorganisms that I don't want to be ingesting. This will kind of get me part of the way. The other thing that you could do is, and this is the first link, Alex, if you got some water filtration tablets, it will make the water taste funny, but this will kill everything else that the filtration does not get. That's, it'll
work.
The
most important part, I would say.
Yeah, right. And actually, the way that I was always thinking about using this was I would kind of save the pure water. I would want to use this anytime I was near a decent enough water source.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Just because.
Yeah, because you never know how long you're going to have that water source.
That's true.
Or that your personal supply would run out too fast.
And I've got one of these in every single one of my bug-out bags, along with the tablets, the water purification tablets. They don't weigh that much. They don't cost that much. What about you? Do you build a bug-out bag?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. I mean, we have things at our house that are like we bought a kit at this point, probably too long ago. Like, we have to buy a new kit, and we're just thinking about this. It's complicated in my scenario, or anyone who has a family, because you're not talking one person. You're not talking, 3 liters for 3 days.
Yeah,
you're talking
that's
times however many people you have in your family. So it adds up quick. That's that much more space that it takes. In our cars, we have little emergency kits and changes of clothes for all of us so that we're always, it's just stashed away in the trunk. Nothing to the degree that you have here.
Right.
And it's making me feel like my little backup comment at the beginning of this segment was pretty insignificant in the grand scheme of things.
I will say this, because I know people are going to ask. No, you cannot filter your own urine. Enough of the salt gets through that it's not going to be healthy for you. So just no.
But no. Bear Grylls does.
No.
No. Okay.
Not even with that live straw. I know there are YouTube videos that show people, oh, yeah, you could survive. No. 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 No.
Let's hope you never have to come to that.
Don't do it. Don't do it. However, one of the most important pieces of my bug-out bags, and this actually we did not show in that episode, is not any of the food or camping gear that is in it. It's a small tablet that I have in each and every single one. It's an e-ink reader, so it requires no batteries. These things will stay good for 10 years.
Oh, interesting.
And it has pages and pages and pages of instructions on how to build tools and things like water purifiers. That is more invaluable in a disaster than anything else. And actually, Jason, I went to Maker Faire a while back, and I took a look at a vendor who was showing us something that I added into my little disaster compendium, because he has open source plans for water filtration systems that he's been building for third world countries.
Nice.
Yeah. Without further ado, let's take a look at the O Horizons filter. One of the more fascinating aspects of the maker world is that people here aren't just trying to make the latest 3D printer or the latest electronic doodad. Some of them are genuinely trying to make the world a better place. That's why I'm speaking with Dylan from O Horizons, who has an idea for making clean water available cheaply for everyone around the world. Dylan, this looks like a concrete form. What's it doing at Maker Faire?
So we're O Horizons, and this is our wood mold. We've engineered it, and you pour concrete into it. We have a construction manual on our website. It's open source, so anyone can go on our website and download it and build this mold. Each mold can make 50 concrete filters, and then the filter gets filled with sand and rocks. It goes in a family's home in a developing country and filters their water. It takes 98% of the bacteria out of the water.
I've seen projects like this, and they get tripped up by the fact that the design ends up being too complicated to replicate at the local space. I mean, yes, you can put up all the plans, but if the parts are exotic, or if the materials that you need aren't readily found, or if it's just too expensive to make each copy, it never takes off. Can you show me some of the things that you've done with this mold to make sure that that's not going to happen?
Yeah, so biosand filters, which are the filters that we do, they were originally designed to be made with a steel mold. And the steel mold, you needed a skilled welder, and you needed the startup costs were about 10 times as expensive as this wood mold. So wood is the beginner's metal. This one, we have a very extensive construction manual, but it's really not too hard to follow. It's very step-by-step, user-friendly. And a lot of organizations have actually tried to make a wood mold because it's so much easier. But a couple of the iterations that we've made for this is the support materials. So instead of screwing screws right into it, which actually warped the wood, we use these support materials and these bolts that actually allows you to make more of these wood molds and more filters per wood mold. And then we have this inner collapsible core right here. So it's kind of like a jigsaw puzzle. You pull out the dagger board, and this is actually patented, and collapses in on itself, and it allows for so many more of these concrete filters to be made from each wood mold. So basically, it's just trying to make the biosand filters, the production process, as simplistic as the filters themselves.
I love this. I especially love the collapsible part of the mold, because I've had that problem where I've made a mold and then the wood pieces become part of it forever because I can't remove them.
Exactly. Lots of field research and actually working. Our first project was in Honduras, and we started seeing that this isn't sustainable. We need to go back to the drawing board and figure out how we can make this better. Our organization's motto is low-tech, high-thinking. So it's all about being creative and figuring out how we can make this as easy as possible.
Also, kudos to you for making your booth a place for young children to come and actually find out what goes into making a water filter. I see they're playing with sand, they're playing with charcoal, they're playing with different materials. This really is one of these projects I think everyone should know about. So once again, could you tell our audience, where can they find you? Where can they find O Horizons? Where can they find out more about these forms?
OHorizons.org. We're a nonprofit. You can go on our website. We have technical resources on there, where you can find out about biosand filters. You can download our construction manual and actually make the wood mold yourself. We're all on social media, so O Horizons. On Twitter, we're ohorizons.org. But we're just trying to reach as many people as possible, make the world a better place.
Thanks again, Dylan. Thank you for giving one of the inspirational stories of Maker Faire. Folks, Dylan, O Horizons, think big,
and drink cleanly.
That's a very cool project.
Yeah.
What I like about it is the notes that I ended up adding to my little disaster book is that he actually tells you how to create all the ingredients out of local source. So you find sand, you create a fire, burn something. That's where you get activated charcoal. And then he shows you how, okay, this is how big it should be. You want different layers of different coarseness. And, you know, it's fascinating because I've built these before. And the water looks like it's clean and it's tested clean. I have still never actually drank anything out of it, though.
Probably best to leave that. I mean, just, you know.
For the disaster.
Leave it for the disaster when you kind of don't have a choice because this is better than not having it.
Right.
It's hard to know ahead of time whether you should drink that water or not. Yeah.
He gave us the plans for one of those concrete filters, mm-hmm. which is nice if you want to do something, you know, in a steady place. But the directions work for any time you can get a container. I've used Home Depot buckets.
Okay.
I've used those big 50-gallon drums. I've used 500-gallon containers, those huge plastic ones. And you just fill it with levels of clay, sand, charcoal, and you just keep alternating layers. The more layers that you can create, the more that it can filter, the faster you'll get output. And then typically I'll kind of let the output sit for a while to let the sediment settle out.
Yeah,
and then maybe run it through a filter to get anything that's left.
Yeah.
When I was doing – we actually did a disaster competition, and I won a prize for creating an ozone generator. And that was just a high-voltage source that was, you know, you pass an arc and you create ozone. But then you could blow the ozone through the water, and that will kill everything. And it doesn't let the water taste funny. So, yay.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're smart.
No, I just I have no family. I have no kids. I have no social life.
Andy's smart.
No. Let's talk about something that's really smart, though, Jason. You know what I want?
What?
I want a way to watch all my stuff, watch all my family, the people that matter to me, the things that I need the most. And I need to make sure that, you know, they're not going to walk away.
Yeah. It's important.
I need to make sure that my parents are okay. I need to make sure that my pets are in the right place. I need to make sure that the house that, let's say, my sister lives in Fremont isn't going to receive an unexpected visitor at the wrong hour. So what I'm looking for really is a security camera, but more than a security camera. I want a security camera with smart, something that's actually intelligent enough to tell me when something is out of place. Because I don't want to watch a screen 24/7 of all the different security cameras I want. Yeah. I want a security camera to tell me, hey, I think this is weird. You should take a look at it. It's too bad that that doesn't exist.
Or does it?
It does indeed in the form of the Lighthouse. Now, to call this a security camera is a great injustice because it's not a security camera. It's a security assistant. In the same way that you've got the voice assistants from all the big technology players adding machine learning, deep neural networking, that's exactly what Lighthouse has done. And they've done it inside the unit. Now, Lighthouse is not just a way to make sure that everything stays put. It's a way to make sure that everything looks normal. Lighthouse is more than that security camera. It's an interactive security assistant powered by the same technology that's in self-driving cars. Now, they've got a 3D time-of-flight sensor. It's a game changer. It's this little device that's at the front of the camera, and it allows them to emit invisible light into the room that it's in and create a 3D measurement of everything that's there. Bounce it off the walls, create 3D structure of the room, and then using advanced AI, a Lighthouse continuously analyzes the 3D structure to detect actual movement and know whether it's a person, pet, or object moving within its view. Now, other cameras have tried to do this just by using motion sensing, but if you've got any of those problems, projects, you know the problems with them, which is light differences can set them off. Movement of inanimate objects can set them off. Not so with the Lighthouse, because the Lighthouse is smart. Unlike other security cameras, you won't get security alerts every time something moves in the frame because it learns. It learns what's normal for your space, and it tells you when something deviates from that normal. And when you are alerted to a possible security threat, you can sound an alarm, speak through the camera, or call 911 directly from the app. This eliminates false security alerts. It lets you invite people to the app, family members, the dog walker, the nanny, while restricting access to your video, giving you complete privacy. How does it do that? Well, right here on the screen, you're seeing this menu that it knows when I'm home. It knows when I'm in the area right next to the camera. And I could tell it not to record video when I'm there if I'm worried about privacy. And I could tell it to arm the system every time I leave and disarm it every time I come home. It really is cool. And what I love about it is the more you use it, the better it gets. That's what we want out of our assistants. You can tell Lighthouse what activities you care about, and it pings you when it happens or doesn't happen. What did the kids do while I was out yesterday? Who did you see at the front door while I was out? Were there any new faces that you hadn't seen before? You can ask these questions, and because Lighthouse is intelligent, because it understands context, it will tell you what you're looking for rather than just giving you a feed barf of everything that it's recorded. Now, it's got everything you want in a security camera. 1080p live stream, two-way talk, night vision, 30-day video history, three different permission settings with the option to turn the camera on or off when the owner is home. Now, pre-orders are sold out right now. That's how popular this is. But Lighthouse will be shipping very soon. Just visit www.light.house/twit to sign up for 15% off Lighthouse when they ship. And a chance to win your very own Lighthouse, plus an entire year of service, absolutely free. That's a $399 value. Again, that's www.light.house/twit. One more time, www.light.house/twit. See site for contest rules, and we thank Lighthouse for their support of Know How.
What was Burke up to?
I never want to know what Burke is up to. Seriously.
Looked fishy to me.
I know. I should ask, Lighthouse, what was Burke up to? And it responded, I don't want to know.
No, we don't want to know.
Lighthouse has learned. Lighthouse has become sentient.
Smart.
Yeah. Folks, as promised, we do have a little goodie, a little bit of unboxing goodness. And this is especially good. Stop looking. I told you. It's in that special dimension in time and space.
Okay.
This is especially good because this has not yet been released. This has been sort of teased for a while, and they were going to try to get this to me back in August, but things got bogged down. A Monif price finally came through. And you may know that I like their printers. I have one of their version 2s. I have one of their selects, their pluses. They work incredibly well. They're low priced. But people have been complaining that they need something that's even lower priced, lower than $300, something that maybe fits into a space a bit better because those printers, you know, they take up a desk and they're not really easy to stow. Something that a true beginner could get into. And so they came up with this.
A cardboard box.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
You put the item in the cardboard box and it comes out as a Scully.
I'm a living in a cardboard box. Now, inside of this is the Monoprice Mini Delta 3D printer. And this is the whole thing. Now, here's the cool thing. This is ready to go. This is fully assembled. So out of the box, this you literally pull it out, and you just plug it in, and it's good to go. Uh-oh. Now, it's got a couple of things that I really, really like. First, it's a Delta. It's a Delta. So rather than having the X and Y axis, I've got these three actuators that go up and down, and that will translate into all the X, Y movement that I need. It's a heated build plate. It's a 110 by 120 millimeter build area. It's not huge, but it's not the smallest I've ever seen. It's still, you know, it's pretty good. It'd be enough for most of the projects that we do here at Know How. Unlike a lot of beginner printers, I'm going to try to take my plastic off, Jason. Told you that's the Filipino plastic. Now, unlike a lot of other beginner printers, this will do both PLA and ABS, not just PLA, because a lot of them, they kind of stick with the lower temp to drive the prices down. Weighs 4 pounds, total of 4 pounds. This auto-calibrates, so I don't have to do any of that weird stuff with the build plate to try to get it right, which almost never works for a long time. This, you push a button, and will automatically adjust the build plate for you. It's all metal. It's got an LCD status screen. It's also got Wi-Fi, micro SD, and USB connectivity. So I don't even have to hook anything up to this to get it to print. And I got to tell you, I really like this thing. They've done such a good job. It's amazing. Now, what we're going to do over the next couple of weeks is I want to run this thing through its paces. I want to put it up next to the Maker Select and next to the Plus and see if the prints compare favorably. Because one of the things about a lot of beginning printers is the prints kind of look how they're supposed to look, but the definition is just not there. Mm-hmm. Actually, I kind of want to take this off.
In the world of 3D printing, where does Monoprice stand on this type of hardware?
Monoprice, they build a lot of clones. So they build low-price clones of a lot of the most popular printers. And I get that. That's cool. It's actually pretty good. The thing that I've told people about the other ones, the ones that we've already had on the show, is they're not beginning printers. They require a little bit of adjustment. You have to know how 3D printing works because you have to adjust the bed. You have to understand, you know, what is good for the filament and not. This, not so much. Now, this is, they literally designed this to be a plug it in and go. It doesn't even have to be connected to your computer. You don't even have to use an SD card. You can hook it up to your Wi-Fi network, send print jobs to it, and it's off to the races. It's not going to be the fastest thing, but, and this is why I think you're going to like it, you've been complaining that those other printers, which will run you between $250 to $300, are too expensive. This little guy, $150. $150 bucks.
Not bad.
Yeah. In fact, you can't get it right now. See, they're just in production. This is actually, I think, number, 700 out of 1,400, the first 1,400 that they made. So when this goes on price, on sale for $150, and it's this small, and you can move it in and out of your work area as necessary, I think this might actually get some of our audience to finally dive into the 3D printing.
No kidding. That's a super low price.
Yeah. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back through some of our projects, and I'm going to divide up some of the larger builds so that they will all fit on this build plate. But I got to say, you know, especially since this head is completely upgradable, I have so many plans for this thing. This might actually come with me to Rome.
Well, it'll fit in your bag. It's that small.
Hold on, wait.
Yeah.
Maker backpack.
You could print yourself with this larger printer, a backpack, to fit this on your back.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? We are going to be printing with this in just a bit. We're just going to tease this. But it's been over 2 years since we did a quadcopter project, Jason. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking that, you know, with you on board and Patrick on board, maybe it's time we started creating again. In fact, I'm doing this right now. This is a 150 class, but this is designed to run indoors. Well, hence the ducting. I created this just so that it wouldn't hurt people or pets or walls. But side effect, I found out that by doing this, by ducting the fans, I actually get a lot more thrust. A ridiculous amount of, like, almost 40% more thrust than I would without the shroud. So, yeah, you know, I think maybe that might be a really good test of our new monoprice Delta.
Dang. See, what can I say? You're smart. You got the skills. Mm. That looks really nice.
That's what we do. Yeah. Yeah. Jason.
Hey.
I know this has been a lot of stuff. We've covered everything from monitors to SSDs.
Yeah, we've covered some ground.
You know, 3D printers to disasters. Mm-hmm. You know? I wish there was a place that people could go where they could maybe get all the show notes.
Not possible, but in a fictional world that actually totally exists, it's probably twit.tv/KH.
KH, yeah. Just go to twit.tv/KH, and you will find not just all of our episodes, but also the show notes for those episodes. That includes the links to the parts that we've purchased for projects, or, for example, where you might buy my favorite SSDs. Also, while you're there, why not subscribe? There's a little drop-down menu, and subscribing is the best way to support KnowHow. If you subscribe, it means that you can get every episode every week automatically into your device of choice. Again, go to twit.tv/KH. But you could also find us on the socials, specifically on Google+. Just go to Google+, look for KnowHow. There's a very short approval process so we can keep out all the scam accounts and all the cam girls. But once you're in, you get access to almost 12,000 Kitas. Those are our know-it-alls, people on every step of the Maker DIY journey. Again, Google+, look for KnowHow, join on in. Of course, that's not the only place to find us on the socials. Jason, you do the tweeters, right? The tweeting.
I do the tweeters, yes. Yeah. Occasionally the subwoofers, if things are really booming. But you can find me on the Twitters, at Jason Howell. Pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
It's just my name.
That's easy. And you can find me at twitter.com/PadreSJ. If you follow me there, you can see what I'm doing even when I'm not in the studio. We've got a third member of our crew who, he pushes all of our buttons. We call him Bill. Bill, you want to say hi to the folks at home?
Excuse me, Padre. It's pronounced Alex.
Never going to call you that.
Also, I have something that's just really, really bugging me right now.
Yes?
That plastic.
No! 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 Plastic stays. Look! It's like a new screen!
Oh, thank God.
Great. Now I got a glass monoprice for another one.
What really?
700 printers. You just destroyed one.
Yeah, why don't you just print one of these?
Wow.
Wow.
What relief. Thank you.
Don't we all feel better? Except for Padre.
You know, it's like those tags on those pillows that said, do not remove.
Oh, please. They're there to be removed, Padre.
The plastic protector police are coming after you, Hal. But you're going to find Bill, he calls himself Alex, at twitter.com/ANELF3. Also, we should mention, we've actually got a studio guest right now.
We do.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of awesome. We've got Nathan from Sacramento. Nathan, can you come up here real quick? I want people to say hi. Say hi.
Which camera am I looking at?
That one right there.
Oh, okay.
See? This is how we treat guests, folks. We love
we
it.
We put them in front of the camera and we tell them to talk.
Nathan, would you get one of these printers for $150?
Actually, will.
You would. $150. Would you take the plastic off?
Been out for a while.
Good man. See, good man. Thank you, Nathan.
Why,
you've given me faith in humanity.
Here, you can have that plastic. You can make your decision, an informed decision, by holding onto that plastic.
Until next time, I am Father Robert Ballasaire.
I'm Jason Howell.
And now that you know how,
go do it.
As long as it doesn't mean tearing the plastic protector off the screen.
Definitely do that.